And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With it till 3 on this Wednesday as we help you get over the hump and towards the weekend. With plenty to do over the next few hours. Coming up, when it comes to Clemson and Georgia, who's under the most pressure in this game on Saturday? Plus, how important is week one of the college football season? We'll also finish our previews of the Power Five conferences by taking a look at the SEC later on this afternoon. I still have some thoughts on Deshaun Watson that we haven't gotten to this week. This story about Bishop Sycamore, a random made-up high school in Ohio that keeps getting odder, that I want to circle back to. Plus, Urban Meyer put his foot in his mouth, but I think he's just telling the truth. And Shane Beamer with a great message for the Gamecocks yesterday. All that and more over the next few hours. We'll talk some golf in an hour with Jeremy Schilling, as we do every Wednesday. And Dean Blandino, Mr. Dean Blandino, will join us once again as we get ready for the upcoming football season. We'll catch up with Dean in about 30 minutes, and he'll let you know if there's any rule changes or anything different you have to keep an eye on this year in college football or the NFL, the former head of officiating for the NFL. That's coming up in a little bit. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays, on Facebook at ESPN Charleston, via email, studio@kirkmanbroadcasting.com, or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. Just click on our show page, and there you can leave a comment for the show. You can find the latest versions of the show podcasted, or you can even take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Just stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 on this Wednesday, Joe's on the steel wheels. Joe, what's going on? How are you?
What's going on? It's T-minus 1 day until our company's first football broadcast of the year.
That's right.
So the only thing better than today is tomorrow.
That's true. That's what I hear. It's also the start of September. So welcome a new month. You got to rip off the old month on the calendar. We're into September 1st. Now, I wasn't outside this morning, but I heard it was nice, comfortable this morning as we head towards a little bit of a fall season. Football begins tomorrow night. The Citadel Coastal Carolina. We'll have coverage beginning at 6 over on the city. We'll be with you for just an hour tomorrow, but oh boy, what an hour it's going to be. Lee Sterling will be with us. The voice of Coastal Carolina will be with us tomorrow as we preview that game. We'll be with you from 12 to 1 tomorrow before I hit the road to Conway. But we got plenty to do today. Let me start with this. Clemson, Georgia, the big game on Saturday night. I think it's the game of the year on paper this season. And I also think there's a lot of pressure on both of these two programs. Now, some will bill this as some sort of elimination game. I don't think that's accurate. What it eliminates is the wiggle room. If you tell me these two teams can only afford one loss this year if they want to make it to the playoff, well, if that one loss comes in week one, then you're kind of in trouble. It's like in Who Wants to Be a Millionaire if you use up all of your lifelines in the first couple of questions. And it's like, okay, well, you know, you already phoned a friend and you already polled the audience and whatever other lifelines they used to offer, and you're only about 5 questions in. So you used up your wiggle room. You're on your own now the rest of the way. No more slip-ups the rest of this competition. Similar at Clemson and Georgia. Whichever team loses Saturday, it doesn't eliminate them from the playoff, but it may eliminate the buffer zone, the breathing room. Especially for Clemson, you can't lose the rest of the way, and even for Georgia in the gauntlet of the SEC, you can't lose the rest of the way. I think there's more pressure on Georgia as a team than there is Clemson. I've come around on this. I originally thought Clemson, because if you lose week one, you're not going to have the schedule in the conference to make up for that loss. Whereas Georgia will have plenty of opportunities to make up for a loss early on. But I've switched on this because I did not see the forest for the trees. That Clemson has such an easy schedule, yeah, they couldn't make up that loss. But with that easy schedule, they can afford a loss a little bit more. Because if you tell me these teams could still make the playoffs, and this is a hypothetical situation, we won't know this until we get there. Depends on what everyone else does in college football. But if you tell me these teams can make it to the playoffs with one loss, well, if Clemson loses week one, they have the easier schedule moving forward. Whereas if Georgia already loses week one, they have the much tougher schedule. It's like burning your per diem the first day, right? You go on a business trip, they give you money for, like, say, a week, and you burn through it in the first 36 hours. It's like, all right, well, now you're on your own the rest of the week. You're going to have to eat ramen noodles in the hotel room the rest of the time. You burnt through your money. That's like Georgia or Clemson. You burn through that one loss you can afford in week one. Just removes the wiggle room. But for Clemson, there's not really another loss on the schedule the rest of the way. And I think one loss will still be enough to get one of these teams in the playoff. Because otherwise, you tell me that Oklahoma, Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, and Clemson, right? You have five teams that all have one loss or less. I find that hard to believe. Georgia and Clemson play each other. Under this assumption, Georgia and Alabama would then play each other in the SEC title game. If we get to a point where all five of those teams have one loss or less after the conference championships, then maybe Clemson would get left out if that loss was to Georgia. But I also think that's assuming a lot. That five teams in the country, right, the four best teams from the best conferences, and then another one from the SEC will only manage one loss at most this year. I think there'll be a few more slip-ups this season. So I do think there's more pressure on Georgia. But more specifically, where I wanted to focus was on the pieces of this game, the people involved. I have three people in this game that I think have the most pressure on them, specifically on Saturday. Let's go in order, starting with number one. Number one, I think, is Kirby Smart. I think Kirby Smart has the most pressure of anybody involved in this game on Saturday. He has lost his last four games against top five teams in the country. Eventually, you have to start to win some of these. I said yesterday in the show, and I've said it in the past, that it's hard to believe in Georgia because they haven't shown the capability of winning these games. But if you don't believe, you'll be surprised when it first happens. However, with that said, if it doesn't happen, you'll continue to be let down, and you'll think, here we go again. Well, they lost another one. They lost to another top five team. Haven't been able to beat Alabama, losing to some other top teams, and then the top five. Kirby Smart has lost four straight games against top five teams. For a program in Georgia who's typically been ranked around the top five and recruits like a top three program. It's not that they don't have the talent to compete. It's not that they're not having as good of a season as some of these other teams. They're usually ranked going up against a top five team. You don't have to win all those matchups, but can you win one once in a while? Kirby's lost four straight, which are, therefore, the four biggest games of his seasons. And if you lose again on Saturday, it's like, oh, here we go. They lost another one. They lost to another top team in the country. There still seems to be that gap between Georgia and the rest of the top teams in the country. We acknowledge, yeah, Georgia's good, but there's still that gap between them where they can't quite catch up to these other schools. I also think at a certain point it could affect recruiting, whereas Kirby Smart's a great recruiter. Georgia's done a great job in recruiting, but at a certain point, if you can no longer get, you know, if you continue to struggle to get over that hurdle of winning national championships or beating the top programs, I think it could turn some kids away. Like, I'd rather just go to that school. Now, yeah, you got a good program. You could put me in the NFL, but you're not beating these other top teams, and you're not winning national championships. And if you lose to Clemson, it's like, oh, well, here we go. Right? Start the season with that bad taste in your mouth. It sets up the rest of their season as well. What I was just talking about. If you lose week one, now you go into the SEC, maybe unable to afford a loss the rest of the way. So I think there's more pressure on Kirby Smart. Clemson won't lose again after this game. So even if they do lose, it's like, okay, well, you know, we'll just run the table the rest of the way. We'll still be okay. If Georgia starts with a loss and then has to look ahead at the SEC schedule, even if it's a little more favorable this year, we still know how tough it is week in and week out, and you're going into that already beginning with the loss. Additionally, Kirby has more to prove, a lot more to prove than Dabo. Dabo's won his national championships. He has achieved more with less. Kirby has had more talent than Dabo and has achieved less and hasn't won that national championship, hasn't beaten the top teams. So I think most pressure is on Kirby because to me, these are similar teams. They match up pretty similarly. They're both top five programs. In fact, they may be top three teams in terms of rosters. They're both breaking in new quarterbacks. They both will have top defenses. They both have great defensive lines. Georgia has the better ground game right now, but Clemson, I think, has the better wide receiving core. There's some questions about both offensive lines. There's a big concern about Clemson's offensive line. Dabo acknowledged that yesterday, going up against this Georgia defensive line. But Georgia's replacing a few offensive linemen this year as well. And they don't have a ton of experience on that offensive line. So early in the season, there's still some questions about the offensive lines, but I think there's a large gap between coaching staffs. I think Clemson has a real advantage there. In fact, these teams are so close on paper that that may be actually be the biggest mismatch in this game. The Clemson coaching staff against the Georgia coaching staff. Number two in terms of most pressure, JT Daniels. Now, both quarterbacks have a lot to prove. Both quarterbacks have a lot of pressure. These teams' national title hopes are on their shoulders this year. It's their first season as a true full-time starting quarterback at these programs. But I pick JT Daniels because I believe DJ has more believers in him than JT Daniels. DJ went to Notre Dame in a big game last year and played well. JT Daniels played really well at the end of the season, but he faced three SEC teams last year that none of them had a winning record. Those were the three games he played in the regular season. Faced three teams in the SEC, none of them were a winning team. One had the 11th worst defense in the country. Another had the 23rd worst defense in the country last year. And then in the bowl game against Cincinnati, a top 10 defense, that was his worst performance of last year. Now, we had Anthony Tresh on the show from Pro Football Focus last month. And this was Tresh actually surprised me. Some strong words about JT Daniels, how he's not buying the hype around JT Daniels just yet. This was Anthony Tresh here on our show.
I should mention Georgia. They definitely have a national title contending roster outside of quarterback, but they have plenty of question marks too with JT Daniels. Even though his debut with Georgia last year against Mississippi State was one of the best performances we saw all year long by a quarterback, that's really the only above average performance we've ever seen from him in his collegiate career. And if he, you know, even going back and analyzing his 2018 true freshman season, you know, it was with USC, a different program. He was a true freshman, but it was at a level that was so below average and at that poor stage that if he were able to recover and produce at an elite, you know, national contending level, Heisman contending level, he would be truly an outlier. We've never seen anyone make the jump from where he started out his collegiate career to a Heisman level. So, I mean, it would be a complete unprecedented thing for JT Daniels to lead Georgia to a national title based off what we've already seen from him, you know, over the course of his collegiate career. So, and then that bowl game against Cincinnati, a truly legit defense, really the only legit defense he faced in that four games he saw, he really faltered. I mean, those last three games overall, he had a sub-70 passing grade. He had multiple turnover-worthy plays against Cincinnati. And so I think we just need to see a lot more from JT Daniels before we can confidently say, you know, he's the real deal. And that's why I do think, you know, even the Georgia national contention talk, the Heisman chatter with JT Daniels, and even the 2022 NFL draft talk with him as well, I think it's kind of getting a little out of hand. I think the expectations for him are a little too lofty right now.
Anthony Tresh on the show last month. Now, I'm a big JT Daniels fan, and I do think he's one of the quarterbacks amongst those that have already played in the SEC who is the most talented. But seems like he does have more to prove. Now, just to follow up from that Tresh audio, I think part of the job, he works for Pro Football Focus, I think part of the job of analysts is kind of predicting the future and seeing it instead of waiting for somebody to show you what they are. Same with teams. As we go into the NFL season, right, it would be poor analysis. Well, let's just see what happens. We have to see them win first. Now, you have to kind of predict what's going to happen. That's the whole idea. And I predict that JT Daniels will have a good year. I think there's a chance for growth if you want to compare his freshman season in the Pac-12 3 years ago. Guys can get better. And as he said, we haven't seen this jump from somebody. I would point to Joe Burrow not too long ago, or even at the NFL level, Josh Allen. In fact, we're not used to seeing this type of growth from one offseason, and we've seen it more recently at the quarterback position the last couple of years. But with that said, while I think JT Daniels will have a good year, I also think he has to prove it more than DJ. I think he has more to prove. Not to mention the fact that we're looking at, and Georgia fans are probably hoping, that he will be the guy to finally get them over the hump and deliver that national championship. Whereas I don't think DJ has the same pressure. Clemson just won a couple of national championships the last couple of years. For Georgia, it's been a 40-year wait. They thought Jake Fromm was the guy. They let Justin Fields go. I think there's more pressure on JT Daniels. And then number three, for those who have the most pressure on Saturday, I say it's Brent Venables or Clemson's defense. But to pick one guy, let's pick the boss of that defense, their defensive coordinator, Brent Venables. They're evenly matched with Georgia, two of the best defenses in the country, both led by really good defensive lines. But the last time we've seen Clemson in games like this, they allowed 49 points to Ohio State, 47 points to Notre Dame, 42 points to LSU, all away from home. Clemson's defense is mostly back this year. It's more experienced. The defensive line is a year older and will be really strong this season. But Clemson won't be tested in the ACC with their defense, so this is their chance, prior to at least the ACC Conference Championship. This is their chance to prove how good this defense is or can be this year, and to show that it can, in fact, match up with some of the top offenses. because we haven't seen that the last 2 years. Vegas has the over-under at 51 for a reason. That's a 27-24 game. They're not expecting a lot of fireworks. They believe this will be a defensive battle. Maybe they think there'll be some early struggles from the new quarterbacks. Now, I think that puts even more pressure on JT Daniels if it is that defensive battle, right? If you are going up against a top-notch defense, you have to play even better, especially, you know, if it's going to be more challenging to try to score points. But can Clemson's defense hold up its end of the bargain? Vegas believes this will be a game probably in the 20s because it's also a three-point spread. So they think it's going to be close. It's not going to be one team that runs away and hides and the other team scores no points. It's going to be close, and it's going to be low scoring. Vegas sees it as a 27-24 game, or at least that's what the bettors see it, because the way you bet is how the lines are set. They want equal money on both sides. Most people see this as a one-possession game in the 20s. Will Clemson's defense perform that strongly, because they haven't the last couple of years in these big spots? Here is Trevor Maddich on ESPN talking about this Clemson defense and how he believes it could actually be the best in the country this year.
Clemson's defense could be the best one that Coach Dabo Swinney has ever had. Now, that's a big statement, considering that the last time the Tigers took the field, Ohio State scorched them for 49 points in the playoffs. But they are talented, they are angry, and they are on a mission to avenge that nightmare with a fantastic mix of young stars, like the ACC Defensive Rookie of the Year, tackle Brian Brzee, and the grizzled leadership of sixth-year super senior linebacker James Skalski. It's the perfect combination of exuberance and experience.
And they're going to have to show it immediately Saturday against Georgia. Trevor Maddich believes that Clemson defense may be the best in the country. Those are the three people I believe have the most pressure on Saturday. Kirby Smart's number one, JT Daniels number two, Brent Venables number three. And I can't wait to kick it off Saturday night. Coming up, week one. How important is it? Well, we know first impressions are always very important, and you only have to look back the last few years to see how week one has impacted teams' seasons. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the More Midday Show, right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
At the dark end of the street, that's where we always meet. Hiding in shadows where we don't belong. Living in darkness to hide our wrong. You and me at the dark end of the street.
Coming up, how important is week one in college football? It's just 1 week of the year. It's just the start of a somewhat long season, but it usually has a big impact. And we'll get to that here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. We'll catch up with Dean Blandino in about 10 minutes, former head of officiating in the NFL, who will let us know of any changes we need to be aware of for college football or the NFL this season. A lot of great games this week to begin the college football year. I ignore week zero. It was something that just happened, but you forget about it. Right, it's like something in your life where you had an awkward experience, or maybe you and a close friend of yours, you've always been great friends, and then one night you had too much to drink, and you fooled around. And you just block that out of your mind. You forget about that. You move forward like it never happened. Right, that's week zero. Just forget about it. That wasn't a memorable experience. We move past it. And for week one, this upcoming weekend in college football, we have more games between Power 5 teams than we have ever had in week one of the college football season. How about that? More matchups between Power. Usually, these are all the cupcakes. This week, we have some ranked teams battling. We have the game of the year in Clemson, Georgia. Got a lot of great games that I'm looking forward to beginning tomorrow night. Minnesota, Ohio State, I think, is very intriguing tomorrow night. I think there's a really good group of five game tomorrow night. I'm certainly very intrigued by the Citadel and Coastal Carolina. Coastal Carolina's ranked to begin the year. But I'm not going to tip my hand too much. Tomorrow we will rank the most interesting games of tomorrow night's slate on the show. But in the meantime, how important, how impactful could week one be? We always hear that, you have time to make up for that loss or win or however that game goes. You have a chance to get better as the year goes on. The playoff committee judges maybe the second half of the season a little more. They'll give you credit if you get better as the year goes on. I always tell you week one's the biggest toss-up of the year, so maybe you could give a team the benefit of the doubt. But first impressions are huge. Even if it's not a coach's first impression, even if a coach has been there for a while, the first impression of the season, you always want to get off on the right foot. It's like when you go back to school, like many kids have the last few weeks. You may have been going to that school for the last 3 years. Maybe you're a high school senior, right, or even a college senior. You've been going to the same school with the same people for years. They all know you, but still, right, you want to show up in your best outfit to begin. They haven't seen you for a few months. Maybe now you can grow a mustache. Maybe you started working out over the summer. You got a new cool haircut. You want to make a good first impression. They've known you for the last couple of years, or they've been going to school with you for 12 years. Doesn't matter. You don't show up in sweatpants on the first day with your hair a mess. You want to look good. Set that first impression on the first day of school, even though it's the people that already know you. They know who you are, what you're about, what type of student you are. You know, if you're a popular kid or whatever. Same with these college football coaches, and more specifically the teams within a season. Look at the past decade. Auburn was coming off, not too far after a national championship win. They went into 2012. Gene Chizik and Auburn lost to Clemson week one. It was a one-touchdown game, two ranked teams. It was a solid game. Auburn lost that game week one. They went 3-9 that year. Chizik was out of a job. Also that season, Brady Hoke at Michigan. They were coming off an 11-2 season. Thinking, ooh, maybe Hoke's the guy. They lost to Alabama. They got stomped by Alabama week one. Hoke was fired the next year. But it took some of the good feelings away. Like, maybe last year was a little flukish. Maybe this team isn't quite back yet. In 2014, Miami was coming off a 9-4 season, the best year under Al Golden. Remember when that was a thing and he was wearing his shirt and tie in the sideline? And then they got blown out by Louisville week one. And Bobby Petrino, Golden was fired the next year. But that kind of started, that was the beginning of the end. In 2015, UCLA beat Virginia. Mike London was fired after that year. That same weekend, to start the 2015 season, Ohio State stomped Virginia Tech. Frank Beamer retired at the end of the season. Retired slash maybe got pushed out the door a little bit. In 2017, just a few years ago, you may recall Texas A&M blew a big lead week one and lost to UCLA. Kevin Sumlin was fired at the end of the year. Also in 2017, Florida got blown out week one by Michigan, and Jim McElwain was gone afterwards. Even if you want to point to a coach that won, Butch Jones beat Georgia Tech by 1 point at Tennessee. It was a game that they should have won by a lot more. They beat Georgia Tech by only 1 point, had a losing season, and Butch Jones was fired at the end of the year. 2018. First game for Willie Taggart at Florida State. They lost 24-3 against Virginia Tech. Set the tone for his tenure there. Never recovered. They scored only 3 points. They got blown out. And it was like, okay, yep, this is not going to work. This is not your Jimbo Fisher, Bobby Bowden's Florida State. It happens every year. And it either shows us that these teams aren't as good as we thought, or maybe they can't recover from a bad loss, or you don't have the right coach. And it's not just you look back and, oh, that first game, right? And that's what led to him getting fired. But again, it either exposes that a team isn't quite as good as we thought, or it's not going to be their season, or it starts the conversation, an embarrassing loss to begin the year, maybe stays with you a little more, that first impression of what your team's going to be like this year. Later on in the season, you point back, oh, yeah, but remember when we lost week one, we got blown out by so-and-so? And it could start to unravel for those coaches who eventually lose their jobs. So this year, week one, very important. There are some big games on the schedule. Manny Diaz in Miami. Right? You want to set the tone. You don't have to beat Alabama, but compete. If you get blown out by Alabama and maybe you're not as competitive as you thought you were going to be in the ACC, reflects poorly certainly on that season, begins to unravel things for Manny Diaz in Miami where people are very excited about him. Some of the games in the Big Ten even. Clemson, Georgia. If Georgia loses, just like I opened the show, Kirby Smart hasn't been able to beat these top teams in the country. I'm not saying it's going to cost him his job, but it'll continue this narrative of, he can't win the big games, can't beat the best teams. And it sets the tone for these teams moving forward. It could be a little revealing about these programs right away in week one or the coaches that are leading them. And in a lot of cases over the past decade, it started the end for a lot of these coaches at said programs. Even though it's just week one, you're just getting settled, there's a long season ahead, week one can have a very big impact, or at least expose some teams, show us what we're truly working with some of these programs. You watch Florida State that day with Willie Taggart and realize, like, yep, no, this program, they're still moving in the wrong direction. Taggart's not going to turn around. He may not be the right guy. This program is in for a world of hurt. And boy, were they. You get that glimpse right away in week one of what may be ahead for these programs or coaches. When we come back, we'll catch up with Dean Blandino, former head of officiating in the NFL. He'll let us know if there are any changes, anything we need to keep an eye on, anything we should look out for this college football or NFL season when it comes to the rules and officiating. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Getting ready for a while, the week one of the college football season. NFL season begins a week from tomorrow. And always appreciate the time from our next guest who gets us caught up on any sort of rule changes or anything to look for with the new football season. He was previously the NFL's vice president of officiating and now the rules analyst for Fox Sports. You've seen him on NFL and college football games. He's Dean Blandino, and he's with us now. Good afternoon, Dean. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. You were back in studio this past weekend for Illinois-Nebraska. Bit of a quirky game with some of the rules. Did it feel good for you to be back in studio as we start another season?
Yeah, it was good to be back. And like you said, we didn't have a lot of time to ease back into it because there was a bunch of stuff in that game. And so it's good to be back and watching college football, and I'm excited for in less than 2 weeks, we'll be watching NFL games.
Yeah, certainly. Now, you did tweet out a photo of a bunch of candy. So before we get to the rules, I do have to ask you, which of those candies did you attack the most while you were there Saturday?
The peanut M&Ms. That's my kryptonite. I can't. So I always, you know, when we start the season, I always buy a bunch of candy and snacks to start and in the studio. It's usually gone by about week two and we got to replenish. So it's always good to have a little sugar pick-me-up when you're in there for long days.
Absolutely. All right, let's get to the rules. College football obviously began this past weekend. As we mentioned, you were there for Illinois-Nebraska. Some great games this weekend. Is there anything in the officiating or rule book this year, any changes that college football fans should be aware of as we get ready for another season?
Yeah, not a lot. The way the college football rules process works, it's a two-year rules change cycle. So you don't change rules every year. You can change player safety rules any year because obviously that's of utmost importance. But this was an off year for rules changes. So not a lot has changed. Targeting is basically the same. Replay is the same. There were some minor tweaks with some timing things in terms of resetting the clock after a replay review. Only going to do that inside 2 minutes in the first half or inside 5 minutes in the second half. Other than that, not a lot of major changes because, like I said, it was an off year for rules changes.
What about in the NFL? As the season begins next week, the NFL is always trying to alter things. Any rule changes or differences that we should be aware of or be prepared for with the upcoming NFL season?
Yeah, a couple of changes. So they made a major change to the blocks below the waist protections. And so now one thing to look for on normal scrimmage plays, runs and passes, there's what's called the tight end box. So it's a zone that goes laterally 2 yards outside the normal tackle position, so just outside the normal tight end position on either side, and then 5 yards on either side of the line of scrimmage. And in that zone, you can block below the waist, legally block below the waist, as long as you're not violating another rule like a chop block or a clip. So that's the low block zone, the tight end zone, they're calling it tight end box. And then anything outside that box, you can't go low. So similar to a change of possession kicking plays where blocking below the waist is prohibited at all times, once you go outside that box, you can't block below the waist. And it applies to both offense and defense. So I think that's going to be something fans will see. And they're big. Their personal fouls are 15-yard penalties. So I think that's a major change. And it's player safety related. So ultimately, that's a good thing.
Talking with Dean Blandino, the former vice president of officiating for the NFL, now the rules analyst for Fox Sports. When you've been on with us before, I asked you about it. I think you said it may not be the case, but we always hear about this idea of emphasizing rules either in preseason or maybe early in the year to try to set the tone. Do you imagine anything like that this year where we should look out for? Maybe there'll be more holding calls or more, you know, defensive, whatever it is. Do you see an emphasis of any type of existing rule already this year in the NFL?
Sure, yeah. There's always a point of emphasis, a list of things that the competition committee looks at and feels like the officials need to emphasize, maybe we need to rein it back in. One of those this year was taunting. So anything that is directed at your opponent, and they use several examples, a receiver running into the end zone and turning and pointing the ball at the defender or waving at the defender. So anything directed at an opponent is considered taunting, and they want officials to emphasize that. So we didn't see a major uptick in those calls during the preseason, but it is something to look for. And the other thing they're going to emphasize is the helmet fouls, the use of the helmet. When a player lowers the head and initiates contact with the helmet, that's another point of emphasis to look for.
Yeah, I wanted to ask about that taunting. As I understand it, it's not necessarily celebrating, but again, taunting the other team or opponent. I have no problem with that. Do you think that does play a big role? Do you think we see some of those, maybe some would call ticky-tack penalties this year with more taunting calls this season?
Well, I hope not, and it's a good distinction to make. They're not talking about the celebrations, and the league loosened up on a lot of those celebration rules a couple of years ago. Now you see the group celebrations and more choreographed stuff, and it's more fun and just sharing the moment with your team, and that's all good. And officials are not supposed to call, throw flags on that. It's more something that's directed at your opponent. They used the example from last year when the Bucks played the Chiefs and during the regular season, and Tyreek Hill, got in the defender's face and gave him kind of a peace sign, and then in the Super Bowl, the player did it back to Tyreek. So it's like that type of thing that can build up during a game and create an altercation. So they're trying to nip that in the bud, and I think that's what the focus is. And usually the players adjust. The players are really good, and the coaches are really good at adjusting, and that stuff tends to regulate itself after a while. A
couple last things for Dean Blandino, rules analyst for Fox Sports, but also was formerly in charge in the NFL of the officiating. NFL Senior VP of Officiating Al Riveron announced he's retiring earlier this month. How does that, or how could that potentially affect things this year in the NFL?
Yeah, so Al retiring, Al was a big part of the replay process. He was, and I worked with Al closely when I was there, and we were in the Game Day Central, which everything, all the video comes back and you're making decisions. So Al was a big part of that. So there's been some changes in that process. Other people are now more involved. Walt Anderson, who is the senior VP of training and development, Perry Fuel, who's also another senior VP in the department. So they're right now they're overseeing that process, and there'll be some other people in the room. So not having Al in the room does change the dynamic, and there'll be some different decision makers this year.
Yeah, that's interesting. Perry Fuel, that's the longtime coach, right?
Yes.
Is that standard to have, coaches make that transition or work with the officials like that?
It's not unprecedented. When I first started at the NFL in the mid-90s, Nick Skorich was an officiating supervisor. Nick had been a coach with the Browns and the Eagles. So, and it's always great to have that coach's perspective. We would bring in, when I was there, we would bring in coaches that weren't working that year. Jeff Fisher, he was in between jobs. Jim Schwartz, Ken Wisenhunt, Lovie Smith. So they would come in and give us their perspective. Hey, this is what we're coaching. This is what we're attempting to do on this play. And then we could have a discussion from an officiating perspective. So it's not unprecedented. Perry made the transition. Perry was a coach with the Panthers, in Carolina with the Giants, and he's made a great transition and obviously understands the game really well, and then has started to, you have to learn the officiating part of it, and that's been part of the process the last 2 years.
Talking with Dean Blandino, a couple of last things. Al Riveron, he did replace you when you went to Fox Sports, stepping into that role. As you know, you're one of the most unpopular guys because no matter what, one side's unhappy. So we pay a lot of attention to this position, especially with the replays. Are they expecting to find one voice to be the guy moving forward? The people that are filling that void now, Perry Fuel, Walt Anderson, are they the ones that this could be a long-term thing? What do you expect for that position moving forward?
Yeah, I think they've started to transition away from maybe that one voice and maybe kind of parse out and kind of separate the duties and give it to more than one person. So, again, I think it's always important that there is a voice that can go out, whether it's with the media or with the coaches, that can communicate what's happening. But I think it's going to be a combination of Walt and Perry and others within the department that will take on those roles. So I think that's definitely a change from what it had been in the past.
when you were working for the league compared to now when you're on TV working for Fox, it's, I'm sure, different people you may hear from. But fans, even though you're not making the calls anymore, fans may hold it against you because they think Joe Buck hates all their teams, right? We're very biased. Do you get more complaints now on TV or when you were working for the NFL?
Less complaints, but it's not. I thought there would be way less, and now I still get complaints. Still, people. There's some people that still haven't gotten the memo that I'm no longer in charge of officiating,
right.
and so they'll tweet at me and they'll blame me for a missed call or something. So I still get that. It's all love. It's all I appreciate the fans, the passion and stuff. But, yeah, I still get blamed for a lot of stuff that happens on Sundays.
I imagine. Last thing for you, Dean, talking with Dean Blandino. You mentioned earlier no real changes to college football. They go on a two-year window. If I were to put you on the spot, is there a change you would like to see come to college football in the next year or two when it comes to the rules?
Yeah, I think overall the game flow is such an important piece, and I think we just have to continue to look at ways to improve game flow, eliminate unnecessary downtime, unnecessary stoppages. A lot of times that's replay. Some things you can't control, whether it's an injury or you got to take TV timeouts and pay the bill. So I think looking at some of the timing rules and maybe the stopping the clock on every first down seems to be, in my opinion, I know it's a big part of the college game, but I feel like maybe limiting that to certain windows, maybe late in the first half, late in the second half, I think that's something just to look at. I don't know if that's ever going to change, but I certainly would be in favor of having that discussion.
He's Dean Blandino, currently the rules analyst for Fox Sports for all their football coverage, but was formerly the vice president of officiating for the NFL and worked with the XFL, the AFF, everything. If you need anything when it comes to rules and football, he's your guy. On Twitter at Dean Blandino, but don't send your hate mail, and always so courteous with his time with us. Dean, appreciate all the time, the insight. Always appreciate you joining us. Enjoy the upcoming football season.
You too. Thanks for having me.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Dean Blandino, great guy. Now, he's a friend of the show. He's been on multiple times. Dean and I text and talk more than people know. But, there's a bad call in the Vikings. Dean, what's going on with those officiating? They blew that Vikings call. But great guy. And Al Riveron replaced Dean Blandino. Now, you may be a big NFL fan and still not really know these names or, what does it matter? I believe Al Riveron, he retired randomly a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if he has some health issues or what, or if he was just retired. It's awkward. Why would you retire less than a month before the start of the season? You retire at the end of the year. Al Riveron, in my opinion, was the worst person in this job that we've had. He took over for the 2018 NFL season. I think the replays specifically in the past 3 years have been worse than ever in the NFL. Now, I don't just say this because Dean is a friend of the show, and we're at least acquaintances. Right? We text every once in a while. I don't know if I'd call him a friend. But I thought Dean was the best in that position. I thought Mike Pereira, who was just before Dean Blandino, was okay. He was solid. And then Dean took over. I thought Dean, right at the time, people were very upset. Dean was in charge with the whole catch-no-catch thing with Dez Bryant. But now that it's one of those things, you don't know what you got till it's gone. He left. Al Riveron took over in 2018, and I don't want to put it all on Al. Maybe it's not fair. Dean would tell me it's not fair. But in the past 3 years, I think the officiating has not only gotten worse, but it's the big thing with the replays. Replays are brutal in the NFL. I think they do a lousy job. And so now Riveron retires this month. We have new people in charge, and one of them is Perry Fuel, the longtime coach, which I find interesting. So I'm very curious to see how replaying goes this year. Now, they're in charge of all officials, but you don't really see that within a game. That's more like off-season stuff, right? That's like an overall thing. But where you really see the impact of that job, of what Al Riveron was doing the last couple of weeks, is being in charge of replay every Sunday. And you're watching your team, you're watching the Panthers, the Falcons, and you're, how do they overturn that? Or how can they not overturn that? That falls back on Al. And I think replay has been the most unpredictable, unreliable in the NFL the last 3 years specifically. It's never easy. It's always hard. We had plenty of controversies when Dean was in charge as well. But I did think that Dean did a good job, much better than what we dealt with the last few years. We'll see if this changes anything in the NFL. But I always appreciate the time and the info from Dean Blandino, former head of officiating in the NFL. We'll wrap up hour one when we come back. Greg Sankey had some comments about SEC scheduling moving forward. And, they say great minds think alike. I've always said Sankey is the best commissioner in college football. And I'm happy to see that he has a similar thought to this great mind as well. And I'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Yes, I knew it all along. I'd have to come back home. Cause this living on the road only made me tired and so. Like a bird without a nest.
Coming up,
like a stranger.
Greg Sankey in, agreement with yours truly. They say great minds think alike, and in this case, that's certainly the.
And the end is not inside.
Well, certainly the case, to use the word twice. Sankey and myself on the same page. I'll let you know what that's in regards to in just a moment here on the Morrow Midday Show. With Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. On Twitter, Naz said, I agree about Al Riveron. He completely sabotaged the challenging pass interference rule just because he felt slighted by it. Yeah, that's true. That was one of those things. I used to use this trick when I was growing up. Right, my parents would always ask me to vacuum, so I'd intentionally do a bad job so they wouldn't bother me with vacuuming anymore. I'm trying to play video games over here, and I'm trying to watch TV. Growing up as a kid, hey, you got to vacuum. Okay, you intentionally do a poor job, so then, fine, we'll just do it ourselves. Right, we'll never ask you to vacuum again. You do such a poor job, we'll just do it next time. I think that was Al Riveron and the whole crew with the pass interference rule, where they made pass interference reviewable for just one season after what happened in New Orleans. And I think they were so against that, but it was kind of just for the optics, that they said, fine, we'll give you the rule, but we're going to make it so dumb that a year from now, you're going to change your mind and want to remove this rule. And that's what happened. They overturned, it was like 10% of the replays, and some that were really obvious, and they refused to overturn them. And by the end of the year, the coaches said, all right, forget this. This is a waste of time. We don't need to make this reviewable anymore. Obviously, it didn't work out. And I always thought that was the NFL's plan. Or at least Riveron and the officiating's plan. That, okay, you want this reviewable. You're so upset at this missed call we had in New Orleans. Fine, we'll review it. But we're going to make you regret it. Right? We're going to make it such a waste of time this year, you're going to take it back. And that's what happened. And no longer are they going to ask for pass interference to be reviewable. Just like the hope is no longer are you going to be bothered with chores because you did such a poor job, your parents rather just do it themselves and do it right. Instead of you, you know, half-assing it, and they have to come and you either yell at you or vacuum anyways. I'm just going to have to do it right later anyways. I might as well vacuum now. That was my trick. So there you go. Use them. Feel free to use that as well on the people in your life. Thank me later. But yes, I don't want to be too hard on Riveron. I don't want to put it all on him, but I thought you noticed a big difference the last 3 years in the replay when Riveron took over for Dean Blandino. And it's not just brown-nosing because Blandino's a friend of the show. I thought he was the best they had. Pereira is solid. I thought Blandino was better. I thought Riveron was a bit of a disaster. So I hope things, I don't know if things get worse. I hope things get better this year with new people in charge of replay for the NFL. Greg Sankey, commissioner of the SEC, went on a Jacksonville radio station and said, when I talk about compelling content with 16 teams, as they were discussing the future of the SEC with the expansion, Sankey said, the more we can move our teams through our campuses, both traveling to and receiving those visiting teams, that's the focus. Is that a specific set of games right now? No, we're going to look at the alternatives. We're engaged actively in that work right now. That was Sankey's answer to how the schedule or pods, how the conference may stack up in the future with more teams in the SEC. But what stood out to me was that first sentence where he said, the more we can move our teams through our campuses, that's the focus. And it should be. It's something I highlighted on the show a couple of weeks ago. It's something I've been saying for years. I never understand this idea that, for example, this year, Alabama is going to Florida. They're playing at Florida. It's the first time in a decade. Why do we have to wait a decade for Alabama and Florida to play each other in Gainesville? Two of the biggest brands in football, historically two of the better programs in the SEC, one of the best environments in college football, the Swamp. Wouldn't it be great to have that every couple of years, Alabama, Florida, two ranked teams playing in a sold-out stadium in the Swamp. The fans are going crazy a Saturday afternoon. Isn't that what's best for the conference? I never understood this idea. And I get it's difficult because you have your rival that you have to play, the same team in the cross-conference, and you only get so many games against the other division of the SEC. There are some restrictions here that force it to be like this. But I laid out on the show a couple of weeks ago that if and when we add Oklahoma and Texas, you go to your four pods, four teams in each pod, and the way I broke down the schedule, every kid would get to play every school in the SEC home and away in their 4 years, if they stay 4 years. That's what's best for the SEC. It's like a rock band. When you go on tour, you don't go to the same cities every tour. I mean, you do, but it's not only the same cities. It's not like, okay, these are the 10 cities we're going to play at every year. That's not what you do. You may hit up New York, you know, the big cities. You go to Chicago every tour. You'll go to New York every tour. You'll go out to L.A. every tour. You'll go down to Florida. Right? There's certain cities you'll always go back to. But then every once in a while, you'll come to South Carolina. And you'll go to Nebraska. Some of these cities or states in the center of the country that are kind of remote and, you know, the flyover states. You'll go every once in a while. You'll go play in North Dakota. Because, A, you may have fans all over the country if you're a successful band. And, B, it's also a way to expose yourself throughout the country. Same with comedians. Right? When comedians go on tour, they don't just play at the same nightclubs. They go all over the country. They mix it up. They want to see different audiences. They want to go to different places, get their name out there. They're very popular in the West. All right, let's start to book some tour dates in the South, try to pick up some popularity there. And it's similar. Well, isn't it the best thing for the SEC if Alabama goes to every campus every couple of years in the SEC? Those other fan bases get to see Alabama come to town? Or Georgia or even Florida? Those are the hottest tickets. Those tickets are going to sell out more and for more money than when Vanderbilt comes to play or even a Missouri. You should want to tour your best team. Show them off. Send them to all the different schools. It's the best thing for the SEC. But it could also give us some more interesting games as well. I don't get this idea that we have to wait every decade for Alabama and Florida to play at the Swamp. That's wrong. That's not the best thing for the conference, and I'm glad Sankey acknowledges it. Hour two next. It's the Mara Midday Show on ESPN Radio.